Proudly presented by Paul Everett's RV Country. This is Hometown Heroes, celebrating everyday Americans who answer the call of duty.
Welcome back to Hometown Heroes, hearing today from 90-year-old Zane Taylor of Orem, Utah. He served with the 35th Infantry Division in Europe during World War II as part of a rifle squad. Help us understand what that means. What were those combat situations like for you? What did you have to do and what did you have to be prepared for?
I happened to have been in about every kind there was. That's why my wife said you got to write a book, because there were so many things, like strafe by an airplane while we were marching down the road. We had artillery every few days or every day. Mortars shoot straight up and they come straight down. You don't know where they came from, and they can land right on top of you. Machine guns. I was under three different machine guns in attacking. But every day we tried to move ahead, but that first week we were by a river that was flooded and was acting like a boundary between the enemy and us. And so we went in a concrete bunker. We were in a pillbox and it had holes. Trouble is the holes were pointing the other way. And so we had to walk out on the side the enemy was. If they saw us walk out, they were shooting over at us and they were trying to hit the pillbox. So we couldn't get out in the daytime. So that meant you had to go out at night. And then we finally left us, and then my first attack was the worst. And that means we lined up in big long lines, and sure enough, we hadn't gone less than a mile. We hit the enemy, and they knew exactly where we were, and so they dropped shells, artillery shells on us. And I made a record in digging a foxhole faster than anybody in the world. I was digging, you know, you dig a hole first for your head, and then when you hear the shell coming, you put your head in there. Then you dig for your shoulders, and then your body, and then your legs. Your feet are the last thing in, because you're hoping maybe your feet would get hit, because then you'd get out of it. And I dug a neat foxhole, but I heard a tree burst. The artillery would rarely hit a tree, but if it did, the shrapnel from the burst would come down instead of just up in the air. And I heard a piece of shrapnel go across my back. And I thought, well, I'm hit right in the back. I just thought I felt something, and when I started to feel around, I couldn't feel any blood or anything. The piece of shrapnel had gone in the side of the foxhole just above my body. It just crossed the top. So that was my first real artillery barrage, and that kind of broke me into where I could start accepting other kinds of things. Like I crossed three rivers. I crossed one river up to my neck, and I crossed a canal in the river paddling a little boat about 4 by 5 or 6 across the river and canal. And the third river, we were going to cross in these little boats, and I went to the captain and lieutenant, and I said, "They'll just shoot us out of the river. We can't cross." He sent two guys up the river, and they found a rope bridge across. The enemy had forgotten to take the rope bridge down. And you saw a whole bunch of guys running. We ran up the river. But you could only get two guys on the rope bridge at a time, because it was bouncing up and down. But we got a bridgehead. We would have been shot out of the river. It was that.
You're thinking there might have saved a few of your buddies' lives. Do you remember the first time that you had to deal with the loss of someone you knew, with one of the guys around you being killed?
First guy, we were on a holding position. We were in a position we could have a little tiny fire. We dug foxholes, and we were up walking around. They couldn't get us food. They brought mail, but they couldn't get us food. And I was standing to the side of this fire trying to get warm. Other guy was sitting on the other side of the fire. A guy in a foxhole was cleaning his rifle, and he had a ground level, and when he opened the bottom of it, take the trigger housing group out, he pulled the trigger. The bullet went along the ground level, hit one guy whose head was sticking out of a foxhole right across his head, come over and hit the guy I was talking to in the hip. I drug him, he slid in the fire, and I drug him out of the fire. Never saw those two guys again because one went across the head and this guy was in bad shape, got hit in the butt. And so that's the first guy. That was really hard. We were fortunate in the squad that we were in. We survived.
And I imagine that you guys in that squad, you and these seven other guys on the cover of your book here, you must have all become pretty close when you're going through these kinds of life-threatening situations together every day.
We'd get up at like maybe 5, 6 in the morning. It was still dark. We had, you know, all day either laying by each other or a couple in a foxhole, or just leaning against trees. We had 4 months to get acquainted. We sat in our helmets in the snow a lot and visited, and I knew all about all these guys in my squad. We didn't talk to a lot of people in the platoon. In fact, we were the biggest squad. We'd lost about 40% of our people in the battalion.
40%, that's almost half the battalion that's either killed or wounded. And doesn't that make you feel like I might be next?
Yeah. Well, whenever we moved out, sometimes 2, 3, 4 times a week, line up in the line and march till you hit the enemy. Then you dig yourself a hole and try to hit the enemy. Try to crawl up where you could shoot them.
Was there anyone going in front of you guys?
Yeah. Usually we had 2 guys. We drew cards for night patrol. I've been on 3 night patrols. And who's going to be the scout? We send a guy out in front of this line as a scout. Usually I had 2 of them out there. And they were probably 50 to 75 yards ahead of the line. And the purpose, you know, the purpose of those scouts were to draw fire. Before we all get up there and get shot, they'd get shot. One night I drew the low card. We had one of the guys had a deck of cards, and we always draw cards for assignments until everybody got an assignment, and then we'd start over. One night I drew it was for scout.
That had to be pretty unnerving, carrying out that scout duty, not knowing when those bullets are going to be flying at you.
That's one of the hardest things you can do, is be a scout or a night patrol, because a scout, that's what you're for, is to get them to start shooting, so the rest of them can find where to shoot.
So did that happen that night?
We got out there probably a half a mile. Nobody was shooting. The officer walked up to me. We'd stopped. And he looked, surveyed. He said, there's a forest up there. I know they're going to be there. We're not going to walk into that whole line. He says, come on back. I was one of the happiest guys. I'd done my scout duty, you know, and to have him tell me, we're not going to walk into it. It looks like it's really bad. And we found out later it was.
And at some point, the weather starts to change, and while you've been fighting this enemy wearing these Nazi uniforms the whole time, now you've got another enemy in the weather. How bad was that? What kind of accommodations did you have sleeping as an infantryman in the worst winter that Europe had seen ever?
Of course, in Nepal, we always looked when we stopped. Looked for a barn, a house. Many times we just go in, a lot of them were gone, and just go in and take their beds. But when it started to rain, the rain was actually worse than the snow because it was hard to cover up. We had a half a tent, and we had rain poncho, but the water would get around them, and, you know, we'd get wet, and the rain worse. But when it started snowing around December 1st, then the snow built up, and we'd always look for a barn or something to get under. That's when we changed clothes, when it started cold. I wore 2 pair of long johns, I wear 2 pair of wool pants, wore 2 shirts, I wore a sweater, I wore a field jacket, I wore 2 pair of socks. I carried extra socks because your feet would sweat and you'd have to change every 2 or 3 days. And I wore a big heavy wool overcoat. I had one. The army towel for a scarf. And then we had a liner for our steel helmet that helped keep us warm. But we were carrying all this extra clothing. Then I was an anti-tank grenadier. Started out, I practiced shooting at a tank before we went online, and I carried 3 grenades. They're heavy in my pack because I had other stuff, but it snowed, and of course the Battle of the Bulge was really, that was the coldest. They said it was so cold. It was 6 below 0 where I was.
You say the Battle of the Bulge, and someone say, oh, my dad was there. I would tell you my grandfather was there. But the Battle of the Bulge went on for quite a while over a very large geographical area. So there are quite a few different quadrants or sections of the Bulge. Explain to us how the 35th Infantry Division was involved and what you experienced there.
We crossed the Saar River into what used to be Germany, attacked across. Took us 3 days to take a little village there and hold it. My job there was to pack the wounded upstairs in a house, lay them out for the medics to doctor up. And I just got to tell you this one story. I went up there about mid-morning after they'd been hauling in wounded guys. And there was a guy laying over on the side of the wall, and he had a hole right in the middle of his breast. They said, we can't do anything for him. We can't get back across the river. He's gone. It was really hard to see a guy just lay there. And then I was also a scout on that crossing. So I went up the hill with the lieutenant, and we could hear tanks coming. We were saved by a P-47. But one of the hardest things was getting across these rivers. I can remember Patton took us out. We just crossed the Blies River in Germany. And he pulled us offline and rushed us, trucked us straight up. We stopped at Metz, 2 nights sleep, and the next day we were on the line in the Bulge. We spent 17 days in the Bulge. I remember the end when it was so cold and we had to stand guard at night, you know, and that's from where I got in trouble and went back from the front.
You say you got in trouble. Why don't you tell us what happened? What got you in trouble? You've mentioned the hospital a few times, even being in the hospital after you came home. So what kind of trouble was this?
I hurt my feet. I didn't know they were frozen or cold for 2 days. But I was in 2 field hospitals, Paris Hospital. Flew me to England to a hospital outside of London. Queen Mary on a ship back to New York. Put me on an ambulance out to a hospital in New Jersey. Not there very long, and then they put me on a train to Colorado and stayed there. And the total time I was in the hospital was 6 months.
That's a long time. But what got you off the lines was frozen feet. So the Battle of the Bulge is still going on, and you didn't realize what bad a shape your feet were in?
If I'd known, I'd seen some others before we moved up to the battle. Guys were going to the medic, so I said, I feel funny, I'm going to the medic. I'd never been to the medic, and I went over there for those 2 nights the day before and says, my feet are feeling funny, and they checked and they said, oh, they're fine. So I just didn't feel like it was anything serious till one night we walked into Bastogne, where we'd been attacking to save the guys who were in there.
The guys from the 101st Airborne who were stuck there, trapped?
I had a buddy in there. We had to walk 7 miles to get in there from Forest. And I couldn't figure out what. My feet feel funny. And then my sergeant says, well, tomorrow we'll see. End up lot worse than I thought.
I guess that's what I'm curious about, and I'm sure our listeners are too. How bad was it? I mean, were you close to losing some toes? Did you lose most of the feeling? Were your feet black? I mean, how bad was it?
Well, if you'll tell these people you talk to buy my next book, they'll have all the details about that. But I did freeze some toes.
You did freeze some toes, is that what you said?
Yeah, I did after amputating.
How many do you have now?
I'll tell you in that next book all about it. I played high school basketball as a senior. I wasn't very good, but it was fun. Anyway, when I got out of the Army, I had planned on playing basketball as a snow college. I figured I could make that team because when I got back, there weren't many guys out of service yet. And so I go out, I tried for, I guess, a week and a half and was killing my right foot. I'd put pads in there and I'd taped them up. I did everything. I wanted to play, but pretty soon I couldn't, my feet wouldn't take it, so I went out. Boxed.
But the Battle of the Bulge and those frozen feet cost you your basketball career. They may have saved your life, though, huh? To get you off the lines at that point? Because a lot of guys died from the time you left the Bulge to the time it ended.
You're exactly right, because that did get me off. Each place I went back, I was still thinking I'm coming back, you know. When I left the guys, I told them, well, I'll be back.
Yeah, you didn't know that you'd still be in the hospital until after both Germany and Japan had surrendered. And you also didn't know you'd still be suffering from those injuries today. We'll explore some of that when we return, and we'll also find out how Zane met his wife of 67 years, Beth. You'll find photos of the Taylors then and now on the Hometown Heroes Facebook page and at hometownheroesradio.com. And we'll be right back after this. With 8 locations in 5 states, there's probably a Paul Everett's RV Country within driving distance of this radio station. But really, it doesn't matter where you live, because Paul Everett has a fly and buy program that will fly you to any of his locations to buy your new RV. It's one of those things that make doing business with Paul such a unique pleasure. Serving RVers for 55 years, you'll find Paul Everett's RV Country throughout the West and online at rvcountry.com. Remember when the bank gave you free checking and savings accounts, even making money for you when you kept your dollars there? Paul Leffler here to say I've recaptured those days, and you can too with EECU. It's not a bank. It's a nonprofit credit union that just keeps growing and growing. The newest branch is in Tulare, and nearly a quarter million EECU members represent 10 different California counties. As little as $250 in a savings account earns you dividends. And access is so easy. 30,000 ATMs, free mobile banking. And I haven't even told you what I love most about EECU, the credit union's support of causes up and down our area, like Central Valley Honor Flight. More than 500 World War II veterans have gotten to see their memorial in Washington, D.C. for free because of the leadership and financial support of EECU. Ready to join the team yet? Call 1-800-538-3328. Paul Everett's RV Country has 8 locations in 5 western states, including Fresno and Indio, California, Bullhead City, Arizona, Laughlin, Nevada, Coburg, Oregon, right off the I-5, and 3 locations in Washington, Fife, Milton, and Mount Vernon. Over 55 years of experience serving the needs of RVers across the country and proud supporters of Hometown Heroes. Find a location near you by visiting rvcountry.com.